welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with Jeremy Pataki about his Tuesday workshop, A Reader's Guide to Poetry. Andreana Donahue will be here to highlight her landscape painting workshop. We'll get the details about Saturday's health fair, and we'll learn about the partnership between Gastineau Elementary and Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note music, and more right here on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Canadian First Nation in British Columbia is condemning the harvesting of herring roe in its territory. It says it's closing the commercial fishery so it can conduct a study of the fish stocks. Dan Karpinchuk reports.
The Heiltsuk First Nation says it's given notice to the federal government in Ottawa that it won't allow the fishery to open this year because the stocks are too weak and need time to rebuild. And it's critical of how the Federal Department of Fisheries and Oceans, or DFO, forecasts herring returns. The First Nation is working with its own experts to establish what it says is an accurate measure of where the stocks are at. On the world market, herring eggs, or roe, are worth millions of dollars. But for the Heiltsuk First Nation, they are also an important food source with spiritual significance. The legal advisor to the First Nation, Carrie Humchit, says the herring stocks are close to collapse.
We're prepared to go out and protect our stocks. We think it's in very bad faith that the DFO is forcing us and other nations up and down the coast to go out and protect our fisheries.
The Heiltsuk is the latest band to speak out against the reopening of the commercial herring fisheries. The Haida Nation recently won an injunction to block a planned fishery. It recently joined two other First Nations to fight a fishery reopening last year. The Department of Fisheries and Oceans says it continues to have talks with all First Nations on the issue and is trying to ensure the fishery is conducted in a sustainable manner. Meanwhile, the chair of the Herring Industry Advisory Board says there are more than enough fish for both his industry and the First Nation. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In southwest Alaska, a hub community that serves 56 Native villages could see its first liquor store in four decades if the Bethel Native Corporation goes ahead with plans to open a package store. It would need to clear regulatory hurdles. KYUK's Ben Matheson has more.
A subsidiary of the Bethel Native Corporation, Bethel Spirits, is in the process of applying for a license to put a packaged liquor store in a portion of their new retail space, which was recently vacated by a major grocery store. The application will go to a state board which oversees liquor licenses. Bethel Mayor Rick Robb has been public about his support for legal sales of alcohol locally.
You can regulate it. We can raise revenue. We can reduce harm because you don't sell to children. You don't sell to those under 21. We can regulate who we sell it to, as in people that have restrictions on them based by court, probation, bail hearings, things like that.
The city government has a critical role in that it can protest applications and, if certain criteria are met, can stop the board from issuing a license. Bethel has a long history of attempts to change alcohol laws over the past 40 years. Most recently, in 2009, Bethel voters removed the local option law that prohibited the sale of alcohol and set limits on importation. In the next year, citizens in an advisory vote rejected five types of liquor sales. The city council protested license applications, and none were approved. Just like 5 years ago, proponents of local alcohol sales should expect organized opposition. Susan Murphy is chair of the Lower Kuskokwim School District Board. She fears that students would suffer if there's more alcohol in their homes.
I plan to speak to the council. I plan to write to the council. I plan to ask my school board to put in a letter of protest to the council.
Bethel is the transportation and services hub for dozens of villages that have completely outlawed alcohol in their communities. The Delta struggles with alcohol-related crimes and death well above the state average, with disproportionate impacts on the majority Alaska Native population. For National Native News, I'm Ben Matheson in Bethel, Alaska.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. STEM students thrive at New Mexico Tech. Personalized instruction, rigorous curricula, and research opportunities groom NM Tech grads for professional and financial success. Costs and salary info of Tech grads in Winds of Change magazine or nmt.edu.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And it is about 6 minutes after the hour here on Tuesday, March 24th, 2015, on this special Tuesday edition of a Juno Afternoon here during the spring membership drive. If you are a fan of Juno Afternoon, I have Joe Pardes here in the studio.
Hey, Scott.
Longtime host and fan and supporter of public media. If you're a fan like us, give us a call at 586-3636 and show your support for public media here in Juno, or go to ktoo.org. But joining Joan and I is Jeremy Pataki. He is the author of Over Winter, among other things, and he's going to be giving a Reader's Guide to Poetry workshop tonight. Is that right? Welcome, Jeremy.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. You're on your whirlwind Southeast Alaska tour. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been great, and it's wrapping up tomorrow after this class this evening. I've had the chance to do some events promoting Over Winter, my new debut book of poems, here in Juneau, Skagway, and Haines. And tonight I'll be, like you said, teaching a class about reading poetry.
Well, it's great to have you here in town, and you are both integral members of 49 Writers. Joan, why don't you tell us a little bit about the organization?
Absolutely, but I do want to say that Jeremy is a little more integral than I am. He's one of the co-founders of 49 Writers. But 49 Writers is not composed of 49 writers. It's composed of many, many writers. 49 is for the state. It's 49 Writers, and it's an organization dedicated to promoting and supporting the literary arts throughout Alaska. We've got over 250 members throughout the state, and in Juneau we've got a vibrant community of over 55 members, and we are bringing classes to Juneau. We have a writing group here in Juneau, and there's online classes. You could check it all out. Just search for 49 Writers. So Jeremy is our second class of our spring season. We had Rachel Weaver, who wrote a book about a couple that lived on Eldridge Rock fiction, and she gave a class while she was here. Jeremy did a reading with Emily Wall on Thursday. Tonight is his reading, his class. What's the title again exactly?
A Reader's Approach to Poetry.
A Reader's Approach to Poetry. So this is for writers and readers, and it's from 6 to 8 at the Jack. We have a few spots left. It's pretty full, but it's worth coming in from out of the sun. It's probably going to be fantastic. And I do have to say that Jeremy's work, Over Winter, that was just came out, this collection of poems, it's his debut collection from University of Alaska Press, is really, really lovely. So he read on with Emily Wall at the New Heritage on Thursday, and he's going to teach this class. And then on Thursday, we have Andy Hall, who's a longtime editor of Alaska Magazine and the author of the critically acclaimed Denali's Howl. He's going to do a nonfiction workshop about queries and do's and don'ts and his kind of knowledge of running that magazine and other news outlets for some 20 years.
How to accept a rejection letter.
That's personal. You have to cry in your pillow on your own time. But we'll talk a little bit about Andy later. Let's focus on Jeremy if we can.
Absolutely. So Over Winter, how long was that in the making, Jeremy?
Well, I would say quite a while. The oldest poems in the book date back, I think, about 8 years, although a lot of them are much newer than that. It's really only been in the last 2.5 years or so that I was really earnestly focused on trying to create a publishable manuscript out of the poems that I had been writing. And so that process, you know, resulting in the book, really began, you know, in the last few years.
How does it feel to look down right now and see your book finished, beautiful, printed?
It's exciting. It really is exciting. And, you know, it's been interesting sort of that feeling of, you know, realizing people are reading the poems and such a solitary activity, the writing, that is. And so to kind of, you know, have that out in the world for whoever wants to see it is really interesting, and it's been nice. I think one of the real pleasures of it, too, is the chance it gives to sort of move on and write new poems and kind of, you know, grow with the, you know, release that comes from being able to feel like the book is done.
That's interesting. To give us a feel for your style, would you consider reading a selection for us?
Sure, thanks. I think I'll read this poem called "From Here You Seem a Braided River." You wore shore-fast ice, birds were starting, spring high water was still white snow in mountains, ice still rimmed your banks. We would come to know gibbous light, we would come to know snow light. We would come to know ice light, star, animal light, window light, want light, sweat light. We'd know the light of the river rippling shadows on the shadows. We'd know candid light, we'd know dinner light and laughter light. We'd know light off the underside of owl wings, melt light and the light of the woods, the light of letters, light of the dash and the strange feathers of baleen on blank walls. We'd know rain light and dream light. We'd know the peaceful light of a single morning. We'd know the thick light beneath the bridge. We'd know the light of our clamor to belong in all light. We'd know bluegrass light, an aquatic light, tundra light, intermountain light, and the light of surprise. I know iceless light of you, winter light, spring light, speech light of you, light of seeing you, memory light, photograph, ache light, light of one of these days, light of so much left to say, light of one day, light of one night and one morning, light of one day.
Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Jeremy, would you say that that's characteristic of the pieces in your collection?
I think it is somewhat characteristic. I think most of the poems have some drive that comes with, you know, rhythm and the sort of, you know, music and sort of time element in the poem. It's a little more repetitious than many of them, but it's something of a sort with them.
Okay. And we were talking before the show, all three of us writers, we know how important it is to read, right?
Yeah.
So that's what this workshop is tonight, a reader's guide to poetry, a reader's, what did you call it?
Oh, well, the word approach, but...
Sure. So what can folks expect tonight, Jeremy?
Well, it'll be a relatively short class, about 2 hours, and we'll just take a look at some of the strategies that are useful in reading poetry as opposed to a newspaper article or a magazine article or a novel or so many of the other, you know, forms of text that we encounter every day. We'll look at some of the ideas that can be, I think, intimidating or alienating for people who might not be really comfortable with reading poetry, and look at ways to sort of overcome those obstacles. We'll, you know, spend some time discussing, you know, why we should bother reading poetry at all, and as well as, you know, how to go about that, and also actually take a look, close look at a couple of poems and read those and discuss. And I think it should be a fun evening. I'm looking forward to it. Like Joan said, I think there's a couple spots left. I think 10 people have signed up, so I think it should be a great discussion.
And where does one go if they want one of those spots?
They go to 49writers.org, search 49 Writing Center, 49 Writers. And I do want to say that, you know, Jeremy earned his MFA from the University of Montana, and he was awarded while there the Poetry Fellowship and a Bertha Morton Scholarship. He lives in McCarthy in Anchorage. So while I was mentioning the people before, I kind of forgot to say that Rachel Weaver lived in Petersburg but now lives in Denver and teaches at the Lighthouse. Jeremy's from McCarthy in Anchorage. Andy Hall, who's coming next Thursday this week, actually, two classes in 1 week for us. He's coming from Anchorage. So we're bringing people who have long, deep roots in Alaska down to Juneau to share their knowledge. And I think Jeremy's more than qualified to teach this class tonight. I think it's something not to be missed.
Absolutely. Jeremy, I was wondering, when was it that you fell in love with poetry as a reader and possibly writer?
You know, I have to say I was pretty young. I grew up around adults who read all kinds of things, and, you know, as a pretty young kid, my grandmother introduced me to poetry, or sort of, you know, she kind of saw me leaning in that direction and encouraged that, and I guess I've been running in that direction ever since. So it's definitely been a lifelong relationship for me, most certainly.
Okay. What should people bring to class tonight?
You know, just come with an open mind and maybe something to write with. We won't be doing too much writing, but, you know, notes and, yeah,
okay.
Smiles.
Sounds good. And remind us the time and place again.
6 p.m. tonight over at the Jack.
Right, and pre-registration is necessary. You go to 49 Riders, and you can sign up there. Members pay one price, non-members pay another price. And if you're interested in becoming a member, that's an opportunity to do it at the website. And then if we have a little more time, can I talk about this class on Thursday?
Please do.
Okay, so Andy Hall, longtime editor of Alaska Magazine and author of critically acclaimed Denali's Howl, he's coming down. We're in partnership with UAS, 49 Riders UAS. Andy's going to do a sound and motion lecture on Friday night. He'll be here on Thursday to do the show. But for people who want to sign up, because there's a few seats left on that, I wanted to be a little more specific about what it's going to go, the class is going to entail. It's newspaper writing, the news writing formula, how to learn it, and how it will help you and when to ignore it. Magazine writing and long-form narrative, finding a good story topic. Writing a book, vetting the idea, getting an agent, researching and writing a proposal, and convincing the publisher's editors to take it on and so forth, identifying the market for your work, submission guidelines, do's and don'ts, and how to work with editors. And this is from someone who straddled both sides of the fence as an author, and his first book was critically acclaimed. You could Google it. I didn't review it, but the Wall Street Journal liked it, and a lot of other places did. I just started it. It's terrific, Denali's Howl, and then also as editor of Alaska Magazine.
And then didn't you say you have another event in April? Tell us about that.
Yes. Before I move on from Andy Hall, so that's Thursday night, and that's going to be at Congregation Sukkot Shalom, which is on Douglas. It's 6 to 9 p.m. It's a three-hour class. It's Thursday. You could sign up. And then we are launching this. 49 Writers also has a members-only writing group. It meets every other month, the first Thursday of the month. Our next one is April 2nd. If you're a member, you know the details. And if you want to become a member and join that group, all are welcome. It's members only because we kind of want people who are really serious about being in a writing group. So we all voted on it. But we're launching this new event series called Literary Happy Hour. And April 26th is going to be our first one, and that's going to be Jeff Kirsch and his wife Libby Bacalar. So Jeff is worked at Comedy Central. He has a whole long line of comedic history as far as working in the real world of comedy. And he works for the Juneau Empire. He's got a very funny column. He had one out just 2 days ago that was pretty funny. And Libby writes One Hot Mess blog, and they're married, and they are funny, funny, funny. And that's going to be April 26th from 4:30 to 6, and that's on the 49 Writers website, too. You just go to the Juneau tab, and you could find out what's going on in our own backyard.
Well, Joan and Jeremy, it's been great talking to both of you. Enjoy the class tonight. I'm sure you will. Thanks for coming in on this beautiful, sunny afternoon. Is there anything we're missing?
Thanks, Scott.
Thanks.
All right.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 24th of March, 2015. It was on this day, 1955, that Tennessee Williams' play Cat on a Hot Tin Roof opened at the Marasco Theater on Broadway. Williams was 44 years old. It got great reviews. The New York Times declared the play the quintessence of life. During rehearsals for the play, Williams had battled with the director, Ilya Kazan, insisting on removing large portions of text, in part to make Maggie the Cat, played by Barbara Belgaddis, seem more sympathetic to the audience. Williams did not agree with the casting of Belgaddis or Burl Ives as Big Daddy, but despite it all, the play was enormously successful. The film came out in 1958, Elizabeth Taylor playing Maggie the Cat. Williams hated that as well. And in a 1974 Broadway revival of Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, he managed to replace what Kazan had omitted, and critics felt the play, particularly the ending, was much richer for it. Late in his life, Tennessee Williams said this was the favorite of all his plays. It's the birthday of the explorer John Wesley Powell, born Mount Morris, New York, 1834, who, despite losing an arm in combat in the Civil War, explored the West and became the first white man ever to navigate the Grand Canyon Gorge. He also explored what are now Zion Canyonlands and Bryce National Park and Lake Powell and Lake Mead. And it's the birthday of Lawrence Ferlinghetti, the poet, born in Bronxville, New York, 1919, raised by French relatives. After his father died, his mother was committed to an asylum. He joined the Navy. He went to college on the GI Bill, moved out to San Francisco, where he translated some French poems, submitted them to a magazine called City Lights, run by Peter Martin, who ran the magazine out of a mezzanine above a floral shop in the Italian neighborhood of North Beach. When the flower shop went out of business, Martin decided to sell paperback books out of that same space. Ferlinghetti and Martin struck up a friendship, decided to go into business together on the bookstore. They named it City Lights, decided to sell quality paperbacks and radical periodicals. It was different from other bookstores. For one thing, it was open until 2 o'clock in the morning. Out of that bookstore, Ferlinghetti began City Lights Publishers, published many of the Beat writers. Though Ferlinghetti himself was very different from the Beats, he said, "I was already married. I was living the quiet life. I ended up being the one that stayed home and kept the shop. I really became identified with the Beats by publishing them." Here's a poem by Lawrence Ferlinghetti, number 2 from his collection, A Far Rockaway of the Heart. Driving a cardboard automobile without a license at the turn of the century, my father ran into my mother on a fun ride at Coney Island, having spied each other eating in a French boarding house nearby, and having decided right there and then that she was, for him, entirely. He followed her into the playland of that evening, where the headlong meeting of their ephemeral flesh on wheels hurtled them forever together, and I, now in the back seat of their eternity, reaching out to embrace them. Poem by Lawrence Ferlinghetti from A Far Rockaway of the Heart, published by New Directions, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Progressive Insurance with its Apron Project celebrating progress and the people who make it happen, and by Lumosity.com, personalized brain training developed by neuroscientists to challenge memory and problem-solving through online games, Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, keep in touch.
If you've ever traveled outside of the U.S., you know how much of an eye-opening experience it can be. You come home with a whole new perspective on the world, and you think, I wish everyone could experience that. But it would be a little pricey to buy a plane ticket for all of your friends. Well, right now, you have a chance to give everyone in Juneau the opportunity to glimpse the international experience every day of the week. Contribute now and help bring new perspectives to all of us. Just go to kto.org. www.hobbs.org.
And it's Tuesday, March 24th, 2015, about 25 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon during our 2015 spring membership drive. And like Cheryl said there in that PSA, it's so easy. You can go to ktoo.org or call 586-3636. Mike Pearson, he's a board member for the Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum, is hanging out in the phone room. And as Mike says, they support, protect, and promote the Juno Douglas City Museum. I like that, Catherine. What do you think?
Oh, that sounds great.
Support, protect, and promote. And this is Catherine Kell of the Canvas. She's the program assistant over there. And we are going to talk all things Canvas. You had a bunch of fun stuff coming up.
Yeah, we have a bunch of things coming up, starting off with our First Friday exhibit, which is going to be the Reach Artist Curated exhibit. We actually had Ariel Rolf and Paul Garnier, both of which curated exhibits for the State Museum and both currently work over there with the transition. They came in and they curated an exhibit of our Reach Artist's artwork. So this is a hand-picked exhibit by these museum professionals, and it should be pretty cool. It's going to be April's first Friday, which is the 3rd, I believe, open from 4:30 to 7 p.m.
And how many folks have art up in that show, would you say?
It's a pretty wide spectrum of our artists. I believe 5 to 10 artists are going to be involved, and there are 29 pieces.
Excellent. And paintings, sculpture, I imagine it's a diverse selection.
So all of the works are 2D works. It is a diverse range of 2D works. We have acrylics, we have mixed media, we have pieces that are actually prints that were done with one of our previous instructors, Inari Kulanin. And yeah. It's going to be pretty cool stuff.
I bet. Looking forward to that show. What else is going on?
So also going on that evening, the Canvas has teamed up with the Gold Town Nickelodeon to bring a documentary to Juno called Share My Kingdom. It's going to be also playing on Friday, April 3rd at 6 p.m. over at the Gold Town. And this particular documentary follows the lives and artistic growth of three artists who experience developmental disabilities and who are basically, they learn and like create their artwork through a program similar to the Canvas called the Little City Foundation, which is actually in Palatine, Illinois.
Okay, so that's the same night at 6 p.m. at the Gold Town Nick.
Mm-hmm.
And what else?
Well, one quick thing about Share My Kingdom, the tickets are going to be $5, suggested donation. You can purchase them at the Gold Town Nickelodeon, and there will also be food provided by Jesse Burton from Pie in the Sky at the event if you need some more incentive to come to this wonderful documentary.
Yeah, and you showed me the poster there a few minutes ago. What brought this documentary to your attention?
This documentary, I believe, was actually brought to our attention by we have two guest artists who are contracted to teach at the Canvas for a year. One is Tim Ortiz, the other one is Andriana Donahue. Before they came up here to teach at the Canvas, they actually traveled around for a year and visited a variety of programs similar to the Canvas to kind of get an overall nationwide perspective on the different programming and how people are like, you know, different programs are being led. And they actually visited Little City Foundation. So.
Okay. Well, looking forward to seeing that, too. And you have several classes as well firing up around then, right?
We do. That same weekend, we're going to be kicking off Raven's Tail Weaving Workshops, which are going to be led by Ricky Tagaban. The first workshop is going to be thigh spinning. So it's going to be learning how to spin merino wool into warps that are used for Raven's Tail Weaving. That particular workshop is going to be two Saturdays in a row, April 4th through the 11th, 4 to 6 p.m., and is $80. The following two Saturdays, April 18th and the 25th, also 4 to 6 p.m., he's going to be leading an additional workshop, which is going to be Raven's Tail Weaving. So using the warps that were created in the previous workshop, you then get to learn how to weave your own small bag using the traditional Raven's Tail Weaving techniques. And that follow-up workshop is going to be $95.
Okay, and if folks want more information, remind us of the website.
They can visit the website at www.canvasarts.org.
Okay, Catherine Kell, lots of exciting stuff going on at the Canvas. Are we missing anything?
Nope, that's about it, but definitely a full weekend.
Absolutely, First Friday. It all starts, it looks like, about April 3rd on Friday. Catherine, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Remember when you learned to hike or hunt, explore, and become curious outdoors? For over 25 years, Discovery Southeast has been connecting Juneau's kids with nature.
Support Discovery Southeast's outdoor education programs to make sure all of our community has the opportunity to enjoy the outdoors.
Our annual banquet and auction fundraiser is Saturday, March 28th at 6 p.m. at the Jack.
Buy your tickets now at discoverysoutheast.org or by calling 463-1500.
Oh, yeah, no, I see it moving. I see it. Yeah.
It's about 35 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host on this beautiful sunny day. It's about 45 degrees outside right now, and this is part of the 2015 Spring Membership Drive, and this is the time of year when we reach out and ask, put the public in public media and ask you listeners to contribute by calling 586-3636 or going to ktoo.org to become a member or to re-up. And now in the studio with me is Laura Stant. She's the Wellness Outreach Coordinator at Bartlett. Welcome, Laura.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on the show today. So tell us a little bit about what you do as a Wellness Outreach Coordinator.
Okay. I work and we have several programs that go out to the community. We do 5 free glucose cholesterol screenings a year at the Nugget Mall. People come and check their glucose and cholesterol. We've had a lot of people. It's really amazing. They have really made lifestyle changes due to tracking their cholesterol and glucose, and it's helped them attain better health. It's pretty remarkable when I see these people and they tell me their stories. We also have a very exciting, we teach safe sitters to 11 to 13-year-olds, which is very fun to have the youth come to the hospital and learn something. And we organize health fairs. This year, we are Bartlett is sponsoring the Juno Community Health Fair, and so we're taking a bigger part in that. We also go to outlying communities, Gustavus, Yakutat, Haines, and Hoonah for health fairs.
Okay, and this health fair will be from 9 to noon this Saturday at the Nugget Mall. Is that right?
That's correct.
And let's get the details on that, what's going to be happening there. And we even need to talk about how we can prep for this, right?
That's right. Okay, so there's going to be a lot going on. It's going to be a very robust health fair. We have a lot of volunteers there ready for, I hope, all the people in Juno will come. But we have, of course, everybody knows that we do low-cost blood tests. Those, if you got everything that we offered, it would be less than $200, whereas if you got it at your doctor's office or at a hospital, it would be $1,000 at least. So if you are coming to the health fair for blood draw, please fast. You drink plenty of water, but we request that you don't eat or drink for 12 hours.
Okay, so that's, let's see, if it starts at 9 o'clock on Saturday, it's about stop eating at least by 9 on Friday night.
That's right.
But you can still drink lots of water.
Drink lots of water. And if you take medication, be sure to take your medication. That's very important, too.
Okay. And tell us a little bit more about some, you said there's going to be some exhibitors, a blood draw, and some other stuff that is available on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We do vision screening, glaucoma screening. We'll be taking blood pressures. We'll have educators for blood pressure, vitamin D, diabetes, colorectal care. Also, Dr. Wong will be there for prostate care. We'll be offering height and weight. We also, there are numerous. We have 25 exhibitors that are coming this year, and so we're very excited. We'll also be having door prizes that were donated by Alaska Club, Pavitz, and the Yoga Path. So we'll have a little drawing, and we hope people participate in that as well.
Okay. Laura, it seems to me like there's sort of this upswing in self-care and making healthy choices in general in society. Do you feel the same way? And if so, how would you explain that?
I definitely see a, I think in Juneau we see that a lot, or I think there is a consciousness about making healthy choices. And then there's a segment of society that is still working on it. And so we're there at the health fair for both populations. We really want to just provide healthy ideas about how you can become more healthy.
Okay. And is there any cost to get into the fair?
If you don't get blood work, which you could just come and enjoy the exhibitors, take time to assess your health, make a health goal, it's a great time to do that. If you come for blood work, it does cost money. So if you've seen a poster around, there are prices on that. Also, you can check Alaska Health Fair Incorporated website. Those prices will be available on that website.
Okay, Laura Statz, the health fair this Saturday from 9 to noon at the Nugget Mall. Is there anything else that you'd like to add, Laura?
No, I think we got it. Thank you, Scott.
You're welcome.
Well, my heart ain't in it. My mind is blank. Can't seem to function. Can't seem to think. Doctor told me, cure your ills. Get yourself a woman, boy, that'll pay your bills. Have her clean your house. Make your bed. Rub your bottom out. Hold your head. Get yourself a lover, a friend, and a wife. Get yourself a woman, boy. Get yourself a life. Doctor told me. Doctor told me. Doctor told me. Get yourself a life. But I got out on the street and I looked around. Here come a woman, she was fine and brown. I said, come here, baby. My name is Bob. I'm a long, tall lover, but I ain't got no job. Doctor told me, I told her. Doctor told me. Doctor told me. Get yourself a life. Well, she looked at me with a sparkle in her eye. Told me I was crazy. Told me I was high. Get out of here, she said, I'll cut you with my knife. You better be gone, boy, get yourself a life. Doctor told me. Doctor told me, I know. Doctor told me, get yourself a life. Here I am standing round this lonesome old house. Ain't got nobody, ain't got no spouse. I sure feel bad, I sure feel blue. One thing I sure feel, I sure need you. Doctor told me. Doctor told me. Doctor told me. Get yourself a life.
This is Bird Note. And this is the sound made by a river of birds. Imagine yourself in the stratosphere looking down on North America. In spring and fall, you'll see what look like huge rivers of ducks, seabirds, shorebirds, raptors, and songbirds. Migrants are moving along the four major North American flyways. In the spring, these rivers of birds flow north. At the end of the breeding season, the rivers flow south. After spending the winter in the southern tier of states, or Central America, or even as far away as South America, millions of birds return each spring to the northern latitudes. One of the world champions of long-distance migration is the Arctic tern. Arctic terns nest across the far northern reaches of the continent during our summer, then fly south to Antarctica for the rest of the year. Some will circle the polar ice pack before heading north again, completing a total round trip of up to 50,000 miles every year. You can see a map of this amazing migration begin at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Support comes from the Wine Bar at the Silver Bow, offering wine by the flight, glass, or bottle, plus a selection of sparkling wines. The menu features wine-friendly foods such as cheese and charcuterie plates and desserts. Open evenings Tuesday through Saturday, downtown on 2nd Street. Details at silverbowbakery.com.
And you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and it's a special 2015 spring edition of our membership drive. We're asking folks to give us a call in at 586-3636 or go to ktoo.org to begin or renew your membership. It's very easy to do. And right now I've been joined by a crew of folks from Sea Alaska Heritage and Gastineau Elementary, Miss Ritter's fourth grade class. Welcome Eli, Riley, Brody, Miss Ritter, and Katrina Hotch to the show. Nice to have you all here.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. And so the grant is called Telling Our Stories, Voices of the Land. Katrina, let's start with you. Can you give us an overview of the program?
Sure. I'm the project manager for Telling Our Stories, Voices on the Land, and it is funded through a federal grant, Alaska Native Education Programs. This is our first year in the grant. We started at Gastineau. That was our first school, and we worked with Ryan Conero and a bunch of cultural specialists that came in and did storytelling and singing and dancing. And then we were also at Zontakahini Middle School and Harborview Elementary. And then, so there's a bunch of different parts. That's the artist in residency part. And then we also have a summer intensive training that will be happening at the end of June, beginning of July. And then also in year two of the grant, we will be having digital storytelling workshops. So the kids who were in the artist in residency this year are going to be doing digital storytelling. And then we are going to be doing the artisan residencies at Floyd Dryden, River Bend, and Glacier Valley.
Well, sounds very interesting. Ms. Ritter, can you tell us a little bit about what this looks like in the classroom?
Yes. So Ryan Conroe was the guest artist in residence, and he came into each of the fourth and fifth grade classes at about between 45 minutes and an hour every day for 3 weeks. And we also had a time that all the fourth and fifth graders got together in one large room. And we learned about the storytelling elements, traditional storytelling elements, an actor's tools that we use for acting. And then piece by piece, as we put those things together, we also learned how to tell our own story. And we used the central character, Raven. And we heard some Raven stories, and then the kids shared some experiences that they'd had in nature, and we kind of took all of their ideas and brought it together in a Raven story with a conflict and a resolution.
Interesting. Brody, can I ask you, what's been your favorite part of this program?
Well, my favorite part is where we
learned the Tlingit language, and we learned the Tlingit dances in it. And one of my favorite parts of the Tlingit language is this part where in the beginning of our story, and it's Ade Gunesh Gwakwak Nik Ye Ya Yagagi. And that means this is the way I'll begin telling my story today. And I thought that is a lot of stuff to try and practice and practice. And I thought that was pretty cool, and that was one of my favorite things.
All right, great answer. Riley, how about you? What's one of your favorite parts of this program?
Well, one of my favorite parts is that we got to dance with a bunch of people who I know and are in my family, sort of. And one of the people is Lily Hope. She lives down my street, and sometimes I take care of her kids. And, well, I really liked being with all those teachers because they taught us a bunch of different things, such as dance, song, and a bunch of different stories.
Okay, good answer, too. Eli, how about you? What's been your favorite part?
I really like the parts, like how we work together to create the story and base it off some of the other things that have happened in our life.
Okay, it sounds like all three of you sort of like being together with other people and practicing. It's sort of the group aspect of it. Does that sound right? Part of it, anyway? Okay, well, it sounds a lot of fun. So what's next for, say, your class? And this can go out to anyone.
Okay, well, me personally, I learned a Tlingit phrase, Yan Yune. Is that right? Yan Yune. We learned it every single day. Mr. Conroe would say, Yan Yune. And that means be ready. And so that's something that I have saved and I use now in my classroom for students to be ready, look ready. We learned a lot about how to be a performer. And this, I mean, the story that we wrote, we ended up performing for families at the Douglas Methodist Church. And so it was really neat to talk about and learn about how to be a serious performer and use your body to express yourself and how to project. And I remember that, and I use that now when students are reading aloud or they're speaking. And we've done some poetry writing and some spoken word. And what we learned from Voices on the Land, we've carried that through the experiences that we've been doing now.
Katrina, what's been the most rewarding part of this program for you?
Oh, my goodness. I think getting to see where the students are at the beginning, and then just the growth that happens, and then at the end when they're up there and they're ready to perform and they're ready to share their work. That's been really exciting, and I think theater is a great tool. Performing arts are a great tool to fit in a lot of other kinds of learning about collaborative work and improving literacy. They wrote their story, and getting comfortable being in front of people and performing. So that's been really exciting. And also the humor that the kids have, that they fit into their stories, those great little details, it's been a lot of fun.
Okay. Brody, so tell us a little bit about maybe how this has changed you. Like, in the future, do you see yourself maybe being an actor or a writer? What have you taken away from this?
Well, it actually it's been pulling me in to be an actor, because I like how it's been like pulling me in to the future, so I know what I could do for the future, and I think I would be like an actor and stuff.
Okay. All right. How about you, Riley? Excuse me. Sorry.
Well, I've always wanted to be very many things. But so far, now that I've worked with Ryan Conroe and all of these other teachers, I really want to be an actress.
Okay. Two for two. How about you, Eli?
Well, after we had, like, worked with Ryan Conroe, I, like, kind of wanted to be a writer because, like, it made me think of a lot more and put a lot more details.
Excellent. Yeah, details are a huge part of being a good writer. And it sounds like the three of you could do future collaborations. Eli could be the writer, you two can be the actors, and you can start a small theater company and go be rich and famous. And don't forget about us here in Juneau when you're on Broadway, okay? Well, it sure has been fun talking to all of you. Katrina, what's next? What should we have on our radar to look out for with the program?
Well, our summer intensive, I actually have, I'm getting this ready, a call to artists looking for a different performer. You know, Ryan and Robin are both very busy people, so trying to find somebody to come in and work with us to create our summer intensive, and so we can have more training in the summer for the students who are really into it and keep that going. And then, you know, next year we're going to be in six schools.
Wow.
at Gastineau, Harborview, Zontukahini, Floyd, Dryden, Riverbend, and Glacier Valley. So it's a pretty big project, but it's been really rewarding to be a part of it.
Okay. Well, Eli, Riley, Brody, Katie Ritter, and Katrina Hotch, thank you all for coming in and sharing this great project with us here on a Juneau afternoon. Very quickly, anything anybody wants to add? We're almost out of time.
You guys should tell what our story was about.
Our story was about Raven wanting to steal a bag of marshmallows from this little girl, except he kept failing. So that, and he had to think of up, like, 10 ideas, except they never worked. And in the end, his tail caught on fire, and he had to go into the water, get stung by a jellyfish, which, like, double fails.
That was Eli, the writer, sharing with all of you, by the way. All right, you all, it sounds
like
you're having fun. Keep up the great work. And thank you for tuning into a Juneau afternoon here on Tuesday, March 24th, 2015. Tomorrow on a Juneau afternoon, Jeff Brown will be your host, and we'll get an update of Perseverance Theater's The Odd Couple. Mandy Massey will give us a preview of the Pillars of America speaker series. We'll learn about a fundraiser for victims of Hurricane Pam. And Connor Lindrum, a.k.a. CDET Post, will be here with details of this month's Poetry Slam. And we'll talk with Sarah Lynn Tabachnik about Thursday's Choose Respect March. And we'll get an update on activities at Eagle Crest, that Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more tomorrow at 3 on KTOO News. And if you missed the show live at 3, it's also available at 4 on KRNN and online at ktoo.org. The weather rest of today, sunny. Highs around 48, light winds. And tonight, becoming locally windy late, mostly clear, lows 30 to 38. Coldest in wind-sheltered areas. West wind 10 miles per hour, becoming northeast in the evening. On Wednesday, increasing clouds, slight chance of rain in the morning, then rain in the afternoon, highs around 44. Northeast wind 10 to 20 miles per hour. Occasional higher gusts up to 35 miles per hour. Downtown Juneau and Douglas in the morning. Wednesday night rain, Thursday rain, highs around 48. Thursday night through Saturday night, rain likely. Thank you again for tuning in to a Juneau Afternoon. I want to thank Mike Pearson of the Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum. And as he said, we support, protect, and promote the Juneau Douglas City Museum. They are in answering phones here during the 2015 Spring Membership Drive. Give us a call now, 586-3636, or go to ktoo.org to begin or renew your membership now. It's a great time.